I just saw a video, right? This is MMA All Day here. It's Mike Perrill, and I had to get this out. I was watching a video with Joe Rogan, and he had John Jones as his guest. And I don't know if this video is new or not. I think it's fairly recent enough. It's after Jones' suspension. And I gotta say, man, while I do believe Jones is the greatest intellectual styled fighter we've ever seen, just looking at his, you could still see that Jones is so, I mean, he's so unmoved by it all. Still, he kind of came out with that, you know, I may have my bad flaws, but look what so and so does. And you could still see that John is still kind of an asshole, and that this whole suspension thing, his being prone to these negative choices that affect his career and lifestyle, it's almost guaranteed to maybe happen again at some point. Just by, you could tell he's not sorry, he's not innerly reflective about, listen, I fucked up, I've been fucking up for so long. And it's just like, damn, John, like, you really don't give a you don't give a crap. At the same time, though, I will state it right now that John Jones is the greatest thing that has ever come to cage. Steroids or no steroids, because it's like Daniel Cormier said. Cormier even said, I've beat up a lot of guys on steroids. The steroids should have had no basis for him beating me the way he did. And which is very true. John didn't beat all them guys with the steroids. Whether they helped or not, I'm not going to get into, because I can't really speak on the benefits and disadvantages of using steroids. I don't know enough about it. But I can tell you from what I've seen, how John applies his craft into my own, and my own, you know, compiled with my own attempts to have a craft of my own. John is a virtuoso. John, and he goes and he paints on the canvas of the UFC, and whoever's in front of him is his easel. You know, they're just holding it up while John paints on them too, because he can. His approach, his angles, his strategy. You've never seen nothing like John Jones. And I don't care what they try to stuff down about Demetrius Johnson. Jones did it in the height of the most deadliest weight class so far. When Jones was coming up, that the light heavyweight division was stocked with killers. And he just ran through them easily, easily. And I know he hit under the cage. I know he was a roid user. I get it. But the way he applied the angle, he wasn't busting people's face with his roid power. He was busting people with his mind and elbows. Remember that, John Jones, killing people with them spinning shits all day. It's not gonna be this. I'm not gonna cheer John's all the way and say, yeah, he is the greatest of all time, because he has a marred career, and we can't pretend that. You can't pretend that that doesn't affect his legacy or whatever. And not to me. I mean, I preferably don't want to get into that. John Jones, skill-wise, is the greatest champion of all time. When you take anyone else out, like, you know, you try to say so far now, Demetrius Johnson is the new GOAT. And I feel that's Dana White trying to get some sales under his belt, because Demetrius Johnson is a champion in the anorexically thin division, like the flyweight division. Like, there's nobody there. And because his skills levels have reached a certain height, he's like the Ronda Rousey of little people. You know, he's the man in division filled with everyone else that's not the man, and he just looks the best. But I feel if he was to go back to the division he was in, or if that division had any type of, you know, serious competition, I don't know if Demetrius Johnson would still be called his greatest. You know, everyone goes over this, the crazy armbar that he landed on Ray Borg. And it's like, you know, we're going to really pretend that Ray Borg, you know, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to a professional fighter, because they could come over and kill me, and I totally understand that. But speaking in comparison amongst his peers, fighters, Ray Borg is a killer. You know, Henry Cejudo, everyone was big on him because he was an Olympic wrestler with some, you know, technical striking. And but he lacked the experience. Ray Borg lacked experience and skill level. That's what, you know, like, Who are you landing these moves on? You know, everyone talks about. Joe Rogan had this talk on his podcast about the prime example of Ali at the height of his powers. And he named the Cleveland William fight when Ali was just in total control and at the height. And you know, it was like, oh, Ali. Yet no one wants to talk about this is Cleveland Williams after he got shot. And I think he lost like a kidney or something, or had his liver removed. Okay, this is not Cleveland Williams that was the same big cat murderous puncher that he was before this outside ring incident. Like, Ali looked good against the shell of a man, but we're going to ignore that Cleveland Williams was the shell of a man he used to be, and we're going to praise Ali's performance because that's what we want to do. We want to glorify Ali. When in reality, he only looked so good because his opponent at the moment was so subpar. It just goes together perfectly, and I think that exact thing happens with Demetrius Johnson. Every time people talk, look what he did. He tapped out Haraguchi with two sets. All right, look what John Jones did, man. He flushed everybody down the toilet in his division on the way up, and he did it looking breezy. Like, I don't care. Like, you can't dismiss that. Like, I've never seen no one do that except Fedor. Khabib. And Khabib's mauling people, but, you know, there's no science to it. Khabib just mauls you. I'm so physically stronger, conditioned that, you know, he wears you down. His submission is attrition. You know, the attrition submission. That's what we're going to call it. Just beat you by attrition. I coined that phrase. All right, Joe Rogan, anyone take that from me? Come on, give me credit. The attrition submission. It's like Kane, where they just... It's like the first I can think of, the first prototype is Joe Frazier. You know, Frazier... God rest his soul. Frazier didn't box on the outside. Frazier crowded you, smothered you, and then destroyed you with hooks, left hooks, shots to the body. You know, he really didn't have a right hand for a large part of his career. Frazier just crowded you and bombarded you with his hooks and uppercuts, and he just mauled you. But he didn't have the same scientific applicable approach to the boxing game like, let's say, someone like Ali. It's the same with Cain Velasquez, Khabib, and it's the difference between them and the fighters like Connor, John, Anderson. You know, these guys, you can see them in the moment trying to calculate and see their spots and pick it. And it's just a different thing, man. And you got to give it to Johns. He's the king of that, you know, of that cerebral cathedral. Like, he comes with it. He comes with his plan. He finds the plan mid-moment, executes it. If it got to be changed, it got to be changed. But let's go. Them Wing Chun kits, I don't understand how nobody in MMA is picking that up. Hard body. Like, I'd be Wing Chun and kicking everybody, every fight. Yoel Romero. That's another thinker right there. An animal. Savage. Little bit of a cheater. Not gonna lie. Little bit of a cheater. But I'm not here to judge. I'm just saying their attributes in the cage. Listen, man. Yoel Romero. Oh, he's a monster. He's a monster. 40-year-old man that can beat up 20-year-old men. He's not playing. Yoel Romero, and you could see, you know, his striking is, oh my God, it's shit sloppy, but it works. He makes it works. His understanding of body rhythmic movements, timing, distance, gauging, explosiveness. Yoel Romero is an athlete, a supreme athlete, and he uses that understanding of body movement and rhythm and timing with his own construct against someone else's physical capabilities, and he knows how to play that game, find the patterns, change up the tempo, go for the double, come back up, cause it was a fake double, land the hook. Like, his striking may not be crisp, but God damn, is it effective. Ugh. He hit Tim Kennedy with that uppercut, like when you see in grammar school, when one kid is beating up another kid, and the other kid didn't want to fight, and he's all hurt on the floor crying, and the first kid is mean enough to give him that last, this is because you a piece of shit up. He hit him with, oh my God. And then now Rockhold's fighting Gustafson. Oh my God. Luke, what are you doing? Luke. Oh man. Another case, what they're saying about Rockhold is right. I think Rockhold lost his mojo after the Michael Bisping fight, and he the next Kevin Randleman, You know, you're not going to be like, what happened to the old Mike? I mean, Luke, the old Luke Rockhold, the new Luke Rockhold can beat the old Luke Rockhold. He's going to be saying that because pretty soon I feel it. I can feel it in the air. I think he's starting to slump because it's gotten his head. And you could tell Rockhold was all about his own self-perceptions, his own egos. He viewed himself as the man, as a monster, as a lion. And now that he doesn't have that view of himself, he might be more prone to being the prey now. Which I hope not. I like a lot Rockhold's style. I liked him, even though, you know, he seems to not really give a fuck about being liked. You know, his approach to fighting was also cerebral, you could tell in a way. But it don't look like that's working anymore. MMA All Day here. I am catching up with my daughter as we get ready for the Cody Garbrandt TJ Dillashaw fight. And that, my child, is how one douchebag gets knocked out.
Whose comb over is better than the others?
That's for sure. They got some good hair. I was trying to explain to her the limiting ideology of Cody Garbrandt's grudge with Dillashaw. Like, I'm mad at you for leaving the team, which was kind of the smart decision for your life and career. So I'm just gonna...
Because, like you said, the, what's it called? What's their team called again?
Alpha Male.
Is this the fact that it's mainly a wrestling thing? They don't really have any good striking coaches, do they?
No, not that.
So, you told me when they brought in a good striking coach, he didn't get along with the teams, you know, with the team's leader. So then they kicked him out.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they did, they had no more striking. And so TJ, who wanted to, you know, expand his repertoire, decided to leave to better his career, and then they got mad at him for leaving.
Mm-hmm. Basically what happened. I feel like Dillashaw should find something to pull out for the win, hopefully. Garbrandt is a dangerous, wicked counterpuncher, and he will make you pay for any perceived opening. But I'm hoping that, well, not that I'm hoping, it's not like I got any money on this, but I feel Dillashaw, being the Swiss Army knife that he is of striking with different tools, he should be able to work something out to get the edge over Cody Garbrandt, even if it's just a decision or split decision. I think he can.
Just like the first one.
No, he knocked him out the first one. He wouldn't take a decision if you got the knockout.
True. Okay, that's
true. I feel that, I don't know, that I see him, I'm starting to get the sense of a lot of stagnation within these divisions, man. Like, all right, so Cody Garbrandt versus Dillashaw. If Dillashaw wins, I guess there's the Dominic Cruz fight. And if Garbrandt wins, there's the rematch, but he already beat Dominic Cruz, and I don't know what Dom has done to really justify a rematch for the title. But because the UFC is now in this cash first, rankings never mentality, where they don't even care if the fight makes sense to anyone following any type of rankings, it's just, can it generate money, they'll throw it to him anyway. And that just seems to be the trend every division now. It don't matter if you're not in the top five, if you've said a couple of crap talk words and the public eat it up, and they're like, oh, wow, that's he's a great shit talker. You get the title fight, you'll get it. So I'm not really too excited for the aftermath. It's the same thing in the light heavyweight division. It's the same thing in the heavyweight division. There's so much stagnation. You know, and John Jones, without John Jones back, it seems stagnant. The division on fire, though, is the lightweight. That's for damn sure. You got Khabib, you got Tony, you got Connor.
And what's going on in the lightweight division?
Nothing major. I'm just saying, like, that's the division where there's more depth. There's more options of who's going to fight who. There's challengers for the title and whatnot. And a lot of other divisions, it's quite boring. It's quite stagnant. And I'm hoping we'll see growth in those areas with talent, fresh faces, fresh maneuvers, fresh approaches and styles.
a lot of this, you know, a lot of now modern MMA, I remember reading a comment by Hicks and Gracie that said one day MMA will be more about who can bench press what instead of who has more skills, and I feel we're at this point. I can name so many fighters who their basic approach to the fight game is so similar. Johnny Hendricks, Colby Covington, Tyrone Woodley, Robbie Lawler, these guys who have wrestling and heavy hands, so they use their wrestling to avoid the ground and they just throw these like tough man contest punches. You know, they're not, and again, I'm speaking from an outsider perspective. I know I have no right. I'm not a professional. But
this is just what you see.
I do feel, I also feel that I also have tried to understand how to strike. I spent the last 7 years learning as much as I can, getting in as much training when I can, where I can, with whoever I can, to help me understand what is striking, what is grappling, and what is everything in between. And when you look about a lot of the way these guys go about throwing punches, they really, and I know MMA striking, you can't do the same striking acumens that you, you know, the same striking setups to have the same striking ability that you would in like a boxing match because of the different approach to an MMA fight. But if you're throwing hands, you're throwing punches, you're basically throwing punching strikes, and boxing is the king of all, you know, punching strikes with hands approach. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys do not follow good boxing principles. Even when they're throwing hooks, jabs, and they throw it like when you used to watch the Tough Man contest and guys were getting knocked out by Butter Bean. I feel like a lot of MMA professionals, I see why professional boxers or kickboxers kind of giggle at them. And while I know it doesn't matter, because the moment you take a professional boxer or a kickboxer on the ground, they're not giggling no more. When you still go about trying to throw a leg kick, the principles of that leg kick have to be applied as if you were throwing a leg kick in a Muay Thai fight. If you're trying to throw an accurate, on point, with the rainbow arc effect.
Mm-hmm. And the chamber.
And the chain. Like, they're just basic acumens of striking that help your technical aspect be more noticeable. And it seems that a lot of MMA fighters, you know, it's like the textbook is good, but the real application of the textbook in real life is different. The way you're supposed to look like when you're throwing a leg kick might actually may be very different
than
it actually comes out when
than
you
how
do
you're
it,
supposed
when,
to
do it full blast. But I guess maybe I'm a technique Nazi. I kind of feel like you should try to get the closest to the perfect technique as you possibly can. And I don't know, man. Look at like someone like Justin Gaethje getting beat up, walking forward, talking about, you know, he can't find his equal. And you're just wondering, like, dude, did you really focus on technique, and did you really, really focus on the best strategy to this fight, and do you really want to get the most for your career and the body that you're putting up? And it's like, I don't know, man. Again, I'm judging from the outside. I don't know nothing about fighting for money, fighting for a living, the heart. I totally get that, but I always felt I understood the principle. If you're good at something, never do it for free, and never do it cheaply in effort. Two things I believe. And while I understand Gaethje puts maximum effort into what he does, I'm also wondering, does he put maximum effort into understanding why he does it? Like, why do I strike this way? Why do I move this way? Is this, can I find a better way to go about it? Can I go a better way to find... It's the guy that he fights very crazily because he takes a hell of a beating. He takes a good ass beating. He really does, and it's not a good thing. He takes a lot.
So he has a stone chin, basically.
Yeah, he got something. That's for sure. But.
Yeah, it's just like it's the technique. You have to have some technique instead of just like, you know, throwing sloppily in fights and then thinking just putting it together is how you're gonna get through it. you know, it's just like, you have to have kind of, you have to have pretty good precision as well. It's, you know, you have to have tactics as well. But it's always just like, you always have to have some type of tactics. You can't just like, you can't, like how I used to play in UFC game. You can't just randomly put together buttons and think you're going to get through the round. So it's like, you know, I get what you're saying.
We're going to find out if I hope they get it.
Yeah. But, yeah, so, like, you just have to have some type of, you can't just be lazy or sloppy and think that because you're a heavy hitter and you got some wrestling down, you can get through, like, a fight, you can win fights. You have to have some type of tactics, strategics.
A sense of plan.
A sense of plan, thank you. But,
I feel that this fight is going to be highly interesting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
We're going to see who comes off right.
So,
remember, it's always better to be the predator than it is to be the prey. So go out and get hunted now. Find out what makes you alive. Take care. Send me all day. We'll get back at you at some point.
Bye.
With that crazy stuff. MMA All Day here. I am catching up with my daughter as we get ready for the Cody Garbrandt TJ Dillashaw fight. And that, my child, is how one douchebag gets knocked out.
Whose comb over is better than the others?
That's for sure. They got some good hair. I was trying to explain to her the limiting ideology of Cody Garbrandt's grudge with Dillashaw. Like, I'm mad at you for leaving the team, which was kind of the smart decision for your life and career. So I'm just gonna,
because like you said, the what's it called, what's their team called again?
Alpha Male.
Is this effect is mainly a wrestling thing. They don't really have any good striking coaches, do they?
No, not that.
So you told me when they brought in a good striking coach, he didn't get along with the teams, you know, with the team's leader. So then they kicked him out.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they did, they had no more striking. And so TJ, who wanted to, you know, expand his repertoire, decided to leave to better his career. And then they got mad at him for leaving.
Mm-hmm. Basically what happened. I feel like Dillashaw should find something to pull out for the win, hopefully. Garbrandt is a dangerous, wicked counterpuncher. He will make you pay for any perceived opening. But I'm hoping that, well, not that I'm hoping, it's not like I got any money on this, but I feel Dillashaw, being the Swiss Army knife that he is of striking with different tools, he should be able to work something out to get the edge over Cody Garbrandt, even if it's just a decision or split decision. I think he can.
Just like the first one.
No, he knocked him out the first one. He wouldn't take a decision if you got the knockout.
True. Okay, that's your point.
I feel that, I don't know, that I see him, I'm starting to get the sense of a lot of stagnation within these divisions, man. Like, all right, so Cody Garbrandt versus Dillashaw. If Dillashaw wins, I guess there's the Dominic Cruz fight. And if Garbrandt wins, there's the rematch. But he already beat Dominic Cruz. And I don't know what Dom has done to really justify a rematch for the title. But because the UFC is now in this cash first, rankings never mentality, where they don't even care if the fight makes sense to anyone following any type of rankings, it's just, can it generate money? They'll throw it to him anyway. And that just seems to be the trend every division now. It don't matter if you're not in the top five. If you've said a couple of crap talk words and the the public eat it up, and they're like, oh, wow, that's he's a great shit talker. You get the title fight. You'll get it. So I'm not really too excited for the aftermath. It's the same thing in the light heavyweight division. It's the same thing in the heavyweight division. There's so much stagnation. You know, and John Jones, without John Jones back, it seems stagnant. The division on fire, though, is the lightweight. That's for damn sure. You got Khabib, you got Tony, you got Connor.
And who's going on in the lightweight division?
Nothing major. I'm just saying, like, that's the division where there's more depth. There's more options of who's going to fight who. There's challengers for the title and whatnot. And a lot of other divisions, it's quite boring. It's quite stagnant. And I'm hoping we'll see growth in those areas with talent, fresh faces, fresh maneuvers, fresh approaches and styles. A lot of this, you know, a lot of now modern MMA. I remember reading a comment by Hicks and Gracie that said one day MMA will be more about who can bench press what instead of who has more skills. And I feel we're at this point. I can name so many fighters who their basic approach to the fight game is so similar. Johnny Hendricks, Colby Covington, Tyrone Woodley, Robbie Lawler, these guys who have wrestling and heavy hands. So they use their wrestling to avoid the ground and they just throw these like tough man contest punches. You know, they're not, and again, I'm speaking from an outsider perspective. I know I have no right. I'm not a professional.
This is just what you see.
I also have tried to understand how to strike. I spent the last 7 years learning as much as I can, getting in as much training when I can, where I can, with whoever I can, to help me understand what is striking, what is grappling, and what is everything in between. And when you look about a lot of the way these guys go about throwing punches, they really, and I know MMA striking, you can't do the same striking acumens that same striking setups to have the same striking ability that you would in like a boxing match because of the different approach to an MMA fight. But if you're throwing hands, you're throwing punches, you're basically throwing punching strikes, and boxing is the king of all, you know, punching strikes with hands approach. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys do not follow good boxing principles, even when they're throwing hooks, jabs, and they throw it like when you used to watch the Tough Man contest and guys were getting knocked out by Butter Bean. I feel like a lot of MMA professionals, I see why professional boxers or kickboxers kind of giggle at them. And while I know it doesn't matter because the moment you take a professional boxer or a kickboxer on the ground, they're not giggling no more. When you still go about trying to throw a leg kick, the principles of that leg kick have to be applied as if you were throwing a leg kick in a Muay Thai fight. If you're trying to throw an accurate, on point, with the rainbow arc effect.
Mm-hmm. And the chamber.
And the chain. Like they're just basic acumens of striking that help your technical aspect be more noticeable. And it seems that a lot of MMA fighters, you know, it's like the textbook is good, but the real application of the textbook in real life is different. The way you're supposed to look like when you're throwing a leg kick may be very different
than
it actually comes out when
you do it
full blast. But I guess maybe I'm a technique Nazi. I kind of feel like you should try to get the closest to the perfect technique as you possibly can. And I don't know, man. Look at like someone like Justin Gaethje getting beat up, walking forward, talking about, you know, he can't find his equal. And you're just wondering, like, dude, did you really focus on technique, and did you really, really focus on the best strategy to this fight, and do you really want to get the most for your career and the body that you're putting up? And it's like, I don't know, man. Again, I'm judging from the outside. I don't know nothing about fighting for money, fighting for a living, the heart. I totally get that. But I do, I always felt I understood the principle. If you're good at something, never do it for free and never do it cheaply in effort. Two things I believe. And while I understand Gaethje puts maximum effort, into what he does. I'm also wondering, does he put maximum effort into understanding why he does it? Like, why do I strike this way? Why do I move this way? Is this, can I find a better way to go about it? Can I go a better way to find...
Who's... That's how you pronounce his name.
It's the guy who fights, and he fights very crazily because he takes a hell of a beating. He takes a good ass beating. He really does, and it's not a good thing. He takes a lot.
So he has a stone chin, basically.
Yeah, he got something. That's for sure. But.
Yeah, it's just like. It's the technique. You have to have some technique instead of just like, you know, throwing sloppily in fights and then thinking just putting it together is what you're gonna get, is how you're gonna get through it. You know, it's just like, you have to have kind of you have to have pretty good precision as well. It's, you know, you have to have tactics as well, but it's always just like, you always have to have some type of tactics. You can't just like, you can't like how I used to play in the UFC game. You can't just randomly put together buttons and think you're going to get through the round.
Uh-uh.
So it's like, you know, I get what you're saying.
We're going to find out if I hope they get it.
Yeah. But, yeah, so like, you just have to have some type of, you can't just be lazy or sloppy and think that because you're a heavy hitter and you got some wrestling down, you can get through, like, a fight, you can win fights. You have to have some type of tactics, strategics.
A sense of plan.
A sense of plan, thank you. But,
I feel that this fight is going to be highly interesting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
We're going to see who comes off right.
So,
remember, it's always better to be the predator than it is to be the prey. So go out and get hunted now. Find out what makes you alive. Take care. This is MMA All Day. We'll get back at you at some point.
Bye.
With that crazy stuff.
Where does it start? It starts with bringing up Rachel Pennington's corner. This is MMA All Day, and we're going to have a nice quick think topic of, is Rachel Pennington and her corner getting unfair scrutiny for what transpired this past weekend? My addition to the whole thing, and this, you know, whoever hears this, I think it's unfair. Because if you are a true student of the game, you will hearken back to when Ali won, fought Liston the first time, and they rubbed the liniment in his back, in his eyes. He almost quit right there if it wasn't for Angelo Dundee's insistence that, listen, just go in there, move around, don't let him hit you. He knew what it was. Angie put some of his eyes, and he knew what it was. He did it to test, and he, oh, shit, like, listen, it'll wear out. He pushed Ali back out there. When Ali fought Joe Frazier for the third time in Thriller in Manila, while Frazier's in his corner begging to let him die, the corner has to save him and not let him out. Ali's corner is telling Ali, "You're not dead. You have to die after the 15th round, and you're gonna go back out there." Even though Ali says, "I'm done. Cut them off." And this is the greatest of all time, okay, folks? So, are we really going to make this big thing of how, oh, no, a corner should protect their fighter? What they should. No, don't get me wrong. Me, personally, I'm more on the side of Joe. I'm the Joe Frazier side of town. Like, I would protect my fighter. I don't want to see no one die. But then there are some that say, listen, this is a gladiatorial life. we who are about to die salute you type situation. I don't know. There's two sides and both perspective, right? Perspective is reality, and how you feel as a person determines how you view Pennington's Corner's decision. Me personally, once she told me she's done, she's done. I, from the way the fight was going and Nunes was whipping that ass, I would have maybe stopped it a lot sooner. Because Pennington was never in control, you know. What's the point of letting you, even though you could see your fighter is not going to win, to let him just like just take an ass whipping? I think I would love my fighter too much. I couldn't see that. You know, unless it's an equal footing, like, yo, at any moment, my fighter can pull out the victory. It's a hard fight. She never had Nunes in trouble. She was just there as a monthly sacrifice. I don't know. I don't think the Corner should have let it continue. But that's my perspective. You know, I'm maybe seen as sometimes as a too caring individual. I'm all hard or whatever you want to say. My point and perspective, they should have stopped that fight a long time ago. And they should have listened to her when she said, I'm done. But that's my perspective. There have been other instances in high-profile fights where the Corner did not listen to the fighter, pushed them a fighter out, and the fighter won. However small, minute, microscopic the chance of that happening is, I believe that's somewhat the attraction of fighting to the fighters. This is the one place that I am in complete control of myself and possibly the situation. And at any given second, that can pay off. If I time it right, if I think right, if I act right. So to believe in your fighter, I don't, you know, I'll say it like this. My favorite superhero movie of all time is Watchmen. And when Ozymandias looks at Dr. Manhattan in his eyes and says, do you understand? Manhattan answers the only logical way he can without condoning or condemning. I understand. And I feel that's the best way you could look at this Pennington situation, for myself anyway. Without condoning or condemning, I understand why it went down the way it went down. But I will say this, in the view of the public, Pennington's Corner did not do themselves or their fighter any favors. Any favors. Listen, man, this is MMA all day, and I just want to let anyone know, listen to this. It's better to be the predator than it is to be the prey. So go get it, all right? Take care.